treason, sedition, rebellion. This is the heritage of the American patriot. Those revolutionaries who stood on principle to fight against tyranny no matter the cost. And that spirit lives strong today in the activists and freedom fighters who fight against the authoritarian state. Each in their own way, each with their own mission, united for the cause.
I had the idea to run on a platform of fuck the police prior to actually winning the primary.
I mean, AOC is a drama queen and she's full of shit.
They said, you don't get to tell us no, we're in the state health department, and I said, hell no.
You brought a freaking guillotine.
People already pushing back in ways that didn't even need any votes to be cast.
I'm not ratting on anybody, and I did what I did, so you're going to have to give me what the law says you have to give me.
You want to make the world a better place? Have some babies and raise them to not be stupid.
Hope I don't get canceled. Talk to you.
These are the people whose stories I'm here to share. I'm Justin O'Donnell, and this is Submersive.
Man, governments are not going to like this shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, activists, anarchists, shit posters, and people from the internet, thanks for tuning back to another episode of Subversive. As always, I'm your host, Justin O'Donnell. And before we get started, just remember, whatever platform you listen on, whether it's YouTube Live, Odyssey, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or on the radio in the air with LRN.fm, you can help grow the show by liking, commenting, subscribing, and most of all, sharing with your friends. And if you enjoy the content, you can join the insurgency over on Patreon at patreon.com/O'Donnell. Again, that's patreon.com/ODONNELL. And make sure to check out our sponsor, sneckswag.com, where you can get all your favorite subversive libertarian merch, where you can get brand new designs for t-shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs, official podcast merch, irreverent jokes, and more. Brand new, wear your principles literally on your sleeves over at sneckswag.com. Give them a visit today. And if you want to keep in touch between shows, follow me on social media and join our community Discord channel where you can chat with other fans of the show at any time. All these links in that link tree in the description of the video or podcast you're listening to, so make sure to check it out today. Today's got a fascinating, fun topic, seems to be coming back over and over and over. The controversy and the divide in libertarian politics of what is libertarianism and how do we present libertarianism to the average person, or should we present libertarianism to the average person in a way that they can accept it or be challenged by it? Now, from the earliest days of the Libertarian Party, whether or not you could say taxation is theft was an argument about appropriateness. Whether or not you could advocate for secession is an argument about appropriateness. Where libertarianism falls in the Overton window of ideas is an argument. And the recent turmoil in the Libertarian Party between the more radical speak to libertarianism tribes and the pragmatic win votes tribes has torn at the heart and soul of the Libertarian Party and, by an extension, the Liberty Movement, affecting even outside groups, nonprofit groups, community groups that embrace libertarian values. And it's an election year, of course, and election years every year. Every election year, we get faced with this controversy as candidates across the country try and run on libertarian platforms with different ideas of how to sell libertarianism to their constituents. And without fail, somebody will break the accepted mold and take all the blame for bringing down everyone else who would fail without them anyways. Joining me tonight is the latest in the wave of controversy for the Libertarian Party candidates. We have Mark Victor from Arizona. Mark, thanks for joining tonight. Short notice, thank you for coming in. I know this has been a real steamroll of a week with people like Dave Smith and Libertarian Party commenters being real upset about your debate performance, but not even talking about the fact that you were in a debate to begin with when they can't.
Hey, Justin. Pleasure to be on your show. Thanks for having me. You know, it's interesting that, and I don't really follow this kind of stuff. I push pro-freedom positions. That's what I do.
Yep.
But just, you know, in Arizona, the debate actually played very, very well. In fact, the mainstream political shows basically said Mark Victor won that debate. They said, I acquitted myself very well. I was the adult in the room. The radio shows have said that as well. I expect that the actual debate, if you look at the debate and you watch it with an open mind, I think clearly I came out better. But yes, there was this comment, oh my God, Mark suggested that questions like age of consent are questions that there are no objective right answers to. And so reasonable minds can disagree. And I said, when reasonable minds are able to disagree on a question, we should solve these in the local communities. I don't see why that's so controversial. People took that and flew off the handle and assumed all kinds of crazy things. And so, which frankly never occurred to me because I just get out there and speak the truth and put out there what I think is the libertarian position. But I did put a responsive video out on my political website, which is liveandletliverevolution.com. So I put a nice video out there, explained exactly what I said, why I said it, why it makes sense. I stand behind it. Seeing now all of this controversy, certainly I could have said things differently. Don't know if I would have or not, because look, I'm interested in making sure we get the correct positions out there. And so if you want, I can explain exactly why I said that, give a little context, what we were talking about.
Sure. So I don't even necessarily disagree with the idea we need to get our positions out there. We need to not hide our positions. We need to not shelter people from our libertarian views. And I think one of the problems the libertarian movement has had in getting going is actually motivating people to stick around. We see every once in a while, like we saw it in 2016, we had a real big upsurge in interest in the Libertarian Party and the libertarian movement following the coattails of the Gary Johnson and Bill Weld campaign. That wasn't interest in Gary Johnson and Bill Weld as much as it was disgust in Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And a big portion of the people who came into the Liberty movement through the Johnson and Weld campaign eventually got radicalized, exposed, learned. There was a joke we used to tell back in 2017, 2018, what's the difference between a libertarian and an anarchist? 6 months. Once you're exposed to the ideas, you start going down the path and there's no turning around. But a big portion also just left. They weren't here because they believed in the values of freedom and liberty. They were here because they needed somewhere to be. And the moment the other two parties became palatable to them again, they were gone with the wind. They weren't tried and true libertarians. They weren't brought in by the radical values. They weren't forced to question their beliefs and their morals in a way that made them reevaluate their positions in a meaningful manner. And I think that's a big problem the Libertarian Party's had since the 1970s, is challenging people to actually change as opposed to just going about things.
Go ahead.
Oh, did I freeze there for a little bit?
Yeah, you did, but you're back.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that's been a big problem the Libertarian Party's had since the 70s, is challenging people to change as opposed to just casting a ballot. Because change, if what we're actually going for when we're running for these offices is to implement change in the way the country is governed, it starts culturally. It starts at the individual family unit, neighborhood units, not at a ballot box. The ballot box is the end result of true cultural change.
I love it. I love how you said that. I love why you said it. If I have a beef with the Libertarian Party, that's it. That you call yourself a libertarian is different than you have had your heart and mind won.
Right.
For the one principle that we believe in, and the only thing I take issue with at all that you said, I don't find it very radical to say that aggression is wrong. I think it's wrong to hit people over the head, to take their stuff, to prod them, to coerce them, to put them in danger. That ain't radical. If you take a position that's okay, I would say that's the radical position. But I agree with you overall. First, let's win the philosophy discussion, right? Are you against aggression or are you for aggression? That's the question. If you're against aggression, welcome to the libertarian crowd, because that's what a libertarian is. We shouldn't be shy about the position. I don't feel bad about it. I'm against aggression in all cases, even if you form up a little group, or if you wear funny hats, or if you're a corporation, or if you're in the government and you wear a badge and you have a special title, I don't care. I'm against aggression in all cases, period. That's the libertarian position, and that's what we should be saying. And if we don't get enough votes because we said it like that, then let's win more hearts and minds first. That's how you get things changed. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do. My goal is to move us towards freedom, peace, and civility, which isn't traditionally a libertarian value, but it is a live and let live concept, which is a slightly different. Live and let live is a peace movement. And by the way, just real fast, let me, if I could, I'd like to say something about that. Live and let live is a peace movement. So it's different than libertarianism. What the libertarians call the non-aggression principle, we live and let livers call the live and let live legal principle. They have the same meaning. But the live and let live crowd also has another principle. We call it the moral principle. And we describe it with the phrase, be a good human. You're absolutely free to ignore everything we say in this space, and we defend your right to do whatever you wanted, so long as you don't aggress. But we're encouraging people to act in certain ways. And so that's the difference between freedom and peace, right? Freedom you get when people stop aggressing against each other. Peace requires a little something more, right? I mean, we might hate each other's guts and yell insults at each other. As long as we don't trespass or initiate force or anything, we're good libertarians, but we're not living at peace. And live and let live is a bigger project. We're trying to get people to peace in a global sense. So I'd encourage people to check that out. Liveandletlive.org is the home of the Live and Let Live Global Peace Movement.
Perfect. Now, I do want to actually circle back around to address maybe the specific controversy here, because we agree on the fundamentals here. We agree that people need to be spoken to from, I'll call it a radical because it's not popular, even though in our moral code, it's correct. It's the radical positions. And I defend this often with the success of New Hampshire. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with the Free State Project.
I am.
What's been accomplished in New Hampshire has been it's been 20 years of libertarians taking the radical approach. It's been 20 years of the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire, going rogue and bucking the pragmatism of the National Party isn't anything new. I know people have been complaining about it with their Twitter account and how they handle things nowadays. But back in the days when Bob Barr was running for president, the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire was so upset that they petitioned their own candidate for president onto the ballot.
Me too. Imagine a president running on a libertarian platform who can't say legalize weed, let alone legalize all drugs.
Legalize cocaine, or re-legalize cocaine, I should say.
Just the way I say things sometimes a little different. Like I said, in the debate, I think you are in charge of your body. You get to decide what goes in it or what doesn't go in it, whether it's a vaccine or something else. You're the iron-fisted dictator of your body if you're a competent adult.
Well, I think that's the root of the issue that a lot of people are having here with what you said. It's not the substance of what you said, because when I watch the clip that people are circulating, they're like, look at this, he's a pedophile, age of consent, apology, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I watched a clip, and he's talking about how that's one of the few legitimate roles of government is to protect that specific thing. Now, I disagree that there's a legitimate role for government there. The most offensive thing you said to me was defending democracy.
Talk about that, and we should talk about that.
Right.
I got a lot to say about that issue, and where it's going to come down to, Justin, is what is your definition of government? Because there are things that the community is going to have to decide, like, for example, if you like self-defense, and I know you do, keep in mind, I've been a criminal defense lawyer now for almost 30 years. You have to, the most popular word in the self-defense statutes is reasonable. And this is a community decision. So if you want self-defense, if you want negligence for torts and things like that, have to be some decisions made at a community level. Now, whether that's government or not is a different question. I'm against all forms of aggression, which of course would rule out taxation. But then again, leaves a secondary question, which is how do we get there? How quickly do we eliminate taxes? These are all things that libertarians like to discuss. And there's good questions in there for sure. But if you want, I can give a little summary of what I said, why I said it, what my thoughts were.
Let me summarize what I heard. You correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. So what I heard you say was you posed a question about the role of government in deciding a question. And you answered that is reasonably people disagree on how this should be handled. There's good faith arguments on both sides of this particular issue. And then you likened it to another similar issue in your mind, which was age of consent, how reasonable people have different definitions and disagreements on it. Therefore, it's the role of the government to democratically decide what that reasonable position should be or reasonable compromise should be. Am I on the money there so far?
I didn't say it's the role of the government.
Okay,
fair enough, and that's a sort of a side comment. What I did say is that there are some questions where there's no objectively right answer. In fact, we were talking about the abortion question just before this came up, and I was explaining my position on abortion. And I see these two issues. The reason why age of consent popped into my head is because I see them as very, very similar questions. The question on abortion, it really is, and I'll put it in libertarian terms for a moment, when does the non-aggression principle start protecting an unborn baby? Some people say at the moment of conception. Other people say 15 weeks. Other people say the point of viability. Well, there's no objectively right answer here. We don't know. This isn't really just a decision we make. And so to put it in more anarchist terms, when does the unborn baby own itself? There's no right answer to that question. So what I say is in those areas, let's take reasonable ranges here and let the local community decide when they want to afford the protection of the non-aggression principle to the unborn baby. So as an example of many other issues that arise here, the age of consent is very, very similar because the age of consent is not just a matter of when does the non-aggression principle protect you, but when are you really fully a self-owning human being? When can you enter into contracts? When can you drink alcohol? Not just when can you have sex. That's one of the many things you can do when you are a competent adult. And we already have different answers here across the country. If you just take the issue of when can you have sex, 16 in Massachusetts, 18 in Arizona. When can you drink alcohol? 21 in some places, 18 in other places. When can you enter into legally enforceable contracts? Different ages in different places. So this was just one example. I could have used and probably should have used the question of what I would call as a lawyer, what is a substantial risk of harm to another person? Because you also violate the non-aggression principle when you put another person in danger, or we lawyers would say when you create a substantial risk of harm. What the hell does that mean? Okay, Chuck Schumer would say, well, if you have one handgun in your home, you're creating a substantial risk of harm to your neighbors. Now, I would say that's an unreasonable position. But, you know, if you've got 2 tons of TNT or unsteady viruses, deadly viruses or something, and you're not storing them correctly, okay, that's definitely creating a substantial risk. But where along that continuum is the line? Reasonable minds disagree. What does Mark Victor say we should do when we get to this situation? First step, let's get a reasonable range of selections of the choices, right? Chuck Schumer's one firearm, sorry, that's not reasonable. But let's figure out what the reasonable range is, and then let's let the local community select the rule. That's step two. And then what I like about this solution is let's put market forces on it. If you really hate the rule in that local community, you can move out very easy, low transaction cost. You can boycott, not do business with them. You can whatever. So what you'll see, I think, over time, we're not going to get 500 different rules. Like, we don't have 500 different rules right now with the age of consent. There's a few generally accepted different rules, 18, 17 different places. Okay, fine, and let the market of people decide what they like. That I don't find this so incredibly controversial.
And I don't think it should be. And I think the big problem is that nobody's actually listening to the argument you made. They just listen to the point you used to make the argument, which was age of consent, which has always been a lightning rod issue within the Libertarian Party and Libertarian movement. Like, we remember when Arvin Vora was running for president and a big part of his platform was lowering the age of consent. And it was never framed as stuff like that. It was never.
Yes, we lower the age of consent. Right. In fact, there's a video on my website that people should look at that clarifies my position. Look, when you're dealing with a debate, and this thing, first of all, this isn't even a debate. Okay, these were like simultaneous press conference. I got a few seconds to try to put a nuanced position out there, and it's never been my position that we should boil our positions down to the lowest common denominator and try to appeal to everybody at the simplest level. I don't think so. I think there are some things that are more nuanced that require a little bit more brain power, if you will. I'm sorry that people who were looking for things to be upset about took what I said and came up with all kinds of crazy things. Mark wants to abolish age of consent laws. Mark wants to look. I said, no such thing. I don't take that position. And so if people want to know what I said, what I meant, why it makes sense, they should just check out Live and Let Live, revolution.com. If they still disagree with me there, let's have a conversation about it. Happy to have a conversation about it.
Right. And we need to be more willing to have those conversations. Like, and here's the thing. I personally, when I'm advising candidates, tell them not to touch the age of consent issue because it's a lightning rod issue. I personally think that once you bring up age of consent, even in a perfectly reasonable context to frame it as a issue that needs community decision-making, not one size fits all answering, then it turns off so many people that you lose the opportunity. Like, there's so many people out there, especially now, and I feel like the age of consent issue right now, culturally in the U.S., where we're seeing this big right-left cultural divide that's worse than it's ever been, surrounding LGBTQ rights, transgender inclusion, and equality, and people on the right, a lot of people on the right of libertarianism, in the Mises Caucus especially, have taken this to heart as, like, it's we need to protect children from these this institutional grooming and the pushing of the LGBT agenda. And so when you talk about age of consent, where the only other people talking about age of consent right now are the people on the left talking about the age of consent for children to get life-altering surgeries as part of LGBT transition surgeries. And this is something that people are trying to stop and impose. So all they heard was you say age of consent, pedophile. That's all they heard, and they weren't willing to listen to anything else you had to say because they've been so obsessed with the idea of groomers and people targeting children that they're ready to see that villain in anywhere except Tom Woods.
Well, I can't communicate with these people, okay? I want to have more of a sophisticated discussion and nuanced discussion with people who are interested in actually having an exchange of ideas and views.
Is that conversation possible in politics?
I don't know if it's possible in politics, but you know what? Let me be clear about this. My goal is to advance the cause of freedom and peace and civility. If somebody else could do it, in fact, I'm putting out another video. It may be on my website today. If not, it will certainly be on tomorrow because, as you know, libertarian candidates that start getting some traction like me here in Arizona always start getting these emails and calls from people to say, hey, Mark, you know, step down. You're going to split the vote with the Republican and we're going to get the Democrat. I'm also getting people saying, Mark, you're going to get the Republican instead of the Democrat. Both sides are urging me to step down and endorse their guy. So I just cut a video on this and I want to be clear about it. If one of these other two candidates can make a case to me that they can better advance the cause of freedom than I am, in other words, if the cause of freedom is better advanced by me stepping down and endorsing one of the other two, I will definitely do that. Freedom is more important to me than getting elected to any particular office. And so no problem. The only caveat I put in there is they got to have the conversation with me and I want to do it publicly. I got nothing to hide. Make your case to me why me stepping down and supporting one of the other guys advances sure. The case of freedom. And I'll go into it with an open mind. If they make that case, I'll step down and endorse them.
I make that argument against the idea of unity too. Here in New Hampshire, our Republican Party has what's called the unity breakfast the week after the primary every election year, where they get all the candidates in the primary together and all the losers get up on stage to endorse the winners and pledge their support to their campaigns. I find it disgusting. I hate it. It's a show of party over principle. It's a show that the party apparatus matters more than the constituents and the people that they're representing. And in 2018, last time the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire had ballot access, I was running for Congress at the time, and I had a primary. I had one of the only contested primaries in the Libertarian Party in the country that year. It was high profile. NBC was covering it. We had the Secretary of State actually got in trouble because they had printed a certain number of ballots estimating Libertarian turnout in the primary and ran out of ballots by noon and had to emergency deliver new ballots to precincts because more people were turning out for the Libertarian Party primary than they even imagined as possible. But I was asked in an interview, it's like, hey, if you lose, will you endorse the other guy? I'm like, not a chance in hell. If I thought he could accurately represent my ideas and my values, I wouldn't be running in the first place.
Well, then, look, you and I just met, right? And so I don't know really about what your views are, but I stated everything that is a libertarian very concisely. Let me state it, and again, first of all, we got a theory of property, right? That's number one. It's not that confusing. I think you can state it by simply saying, you own you, I own me. That gets you your theory of property. Most people tend to agree with that. The second thing is this idea that aggression is wrong. It's wrong no matter who's bringing it. It's wrong in all cases. It's wrong to accomplish any ends. Now, if you agree with that position, you're a libertarian. So, you know, if you don't agree with that position, stop calling yourself a libertarian, because you might have libertarian leanings. You may accidentally overlap with a, like, you might enjoy smoking weed or something and think weed should be legal because you like smoking weed. Or you might think weed helps certain medical conditions. Great, we overlap. That is not the reason that a libertarian takes the position that weed should be legal. The reason you should be left alone if you're smoking weed, and if you're a competent adult, obviously, on your own property, is because you're not aggressing. That's the end of the analysis for the libertarian. So, you know, if you're really a libertarian, then you should be supporting other libertarians if they're making that argument. If they're making a different argument, they're really not libertarians in the first place.
No, I can agree there too. And I mean, this comes down to the root is I think a lot of the people, libertarians who are shit talking you on Twitter and the internet, just didn't hear your argument. They weren't willing to listen to your argument because you made a libertarian argument by any definition I could give it without a doubt. There's been some talk about how, and I'll circle back to this because the controversy's kind of evolved into having multiple facets of people attacking you, where it's not just this issue. Now it's all of a sudden this issue and other issues.
I'm not even aware of what other issues there
are. Well, politician not on Twitter, folks. Take a note. So one of the things they're attacking you for on is actually your stance on war, David Petraeus, Ukraine, everything going on now, where the argument is being made that your Republican opponent, Blake Masters, is the anti-war candidate and that you're actually pro-military industrial complex and in favor of supporting the military industrial complex regime because of comments you'd made years ago regarding David Petraeus. I don't know what those comments were.
I never made any comments about Petraeus ever. There won't be anything anywhere in 30 years of speaking publicly where I said anything about Petraeus. I don't know what they're talking about there, but I did during the debate. In response to Blake Masters, this issue came up. Blake Masters has put some statements out there that at least I understand as calling the entire leadership of the United States military basically incompetent boobs. He brought up one general, I don't think it was Petraeus, who he thinks was sort of promoting a woke agenda. Well, I agree with that shouldn't be part of the military for sure. I think that was an overgeneralization. I'm very much against overgeneralizations, and I threw out some other generals, Mattis, as one who I do not think is an incompetent boob. And Dave Smith attacked me on that because of Mattis's position, which was different from Trump about pulling troops out of Syria. But that's what it was.
I confuse anyone over the rank of captain, but that's from my time in the infantry.
Well, that's one position, right? Mattis has many other positions on things that I like, and there are other things about Mattis, and I really only raised him to say not everybody who's a general in the military is an incompetent pro-wokester boob. So, no, my position on the military-industrial complex is as follows. I am pro-peace. I founded a global peace movement. I think that we should have a military. I think we should use the military exactly the way you should use a firearm. In self-defense and in self-defense of our nation, not to build nations, not to be the world's police, not to intervene in other conflicts. In fact, we can talk about this. I wish it had come up in the debate. My position on the Russia-Ukraine thing is that the United States government should not be involved militarily or financially, should not be sending money or anything at all. However, if you want to send money or I want to send money, I'm a free man. I can send over there. I can go over there and fight. I can send arms. And so I'm in favor. If you want to help the Ukraine, in fact, I did help the Ukraine. I sent my money over there for the purpose of helping people who I perceive are victims of aggression So I think we should do that if we want to do that. But there's no role for the government unless, you know, the question is always the same. Is Russia committing aggression against us, or are they threatening to commit aggression against us? The answer here, as best I can tell, is no. So that ends the analysis for the United States position.
Sure. And Russia may have to do the same analysis on their end. Did they consider NATO and the United States threatening to put nuclear weapons on their border to be an act of aggression that needed to be responded to? Well,
I would say there, it's a little bit more than whether they just considered it, right?
Yeah.
Because I apply exactly the same self-defense. And by the way, I comment on videos nationally. I do criminal defense for many years, and I've had many, many self-defense cases. But it's more than just you perceived the threat. The question is, would a reasonable person in your position have perceived the threat? And of course, we can discuss this, right, about whether or not NATO...
Was John F. Kennedy a reasonable person?
It was who?
John F. Kennedy.
Yeah, we can discuss what happened with the situation over there in Cuba and try to make a parallel to that situation. Yep. And, you know, the thing is, it becomes a complex mess, right? Because, right, you know, from my position, I think there probably was a very good opportunity after the fall of the Soviet Union to try to get Russia on our team, maybe even let them in on NATO. I don't care about that. I just want to get to peace. Let's all get on the same side, right? So there were opportunities there. Yes, I also recognize the United States made promises not to expand NATO East. They broke those promises. There's lots to talk about there. And we can get into a whole discussion about foreign policy. And maybe we could be, you know, by the way, on my website, liveandletliverevolution.com, I've listed countless issues and I've written all my words. I've written extensively on each of these, including foreign policy, including how do we fund the cops, the courts, the national defense without taxes. I did a whole section on taxes.
And it's incredibly thorough. And I'll give you all the credit in the world there, because when I first saw the accusations coming from Dave Smith about how Blake Masters was the anti-war candidate, that you were pro-military industrial complex, the first thing I did was, having never heard of you, never looked at your stuff, I went to your website, I looked it up. I'm like, well, if this is true, I'm going to go destroy this person. I'm going to crucify the living heck out of them. And I read your platform on war and military use of force on your website. And then I ended up taking a screenshot of your platform, taking a screenshot of Blake Masters' platform on the same issue, where he calls for sending U.S. troops to Israel to defend them, sending more aid to Ukraine, getting tough on China and provoking China, and tripling the size of federal law enforcement and militarizing our border and militarizing our police here at home. And I put them up on Twitter. I'm like, which one of these is the pro-war versus the anti-war platform? And everyone who thought you were the pro-war candidate, because Dave Smith had told them so on Twitter, had chosen your platform. It's like, oh, that's the right one. I'm like, but this is who was endorsed over him as the anti-war candidate.
That's disgraceful, frankly, for a libertarian to look. It's one thing if you want to disagree with something I've said, that's fine. Let's have a conversation. In fact, I'll go so far to say you can change my mind. I'm always consistent about the non-aggression principle, which I now call the live and let live legal principle, which I'm sure you noticed on my website. Yep. But my goal on every issue is to be absolutely 100% faithful to that principle. The way to change my mind is to say, hey, Mark, I think you got it wrong on the principle here. And if you point that out to me, I'll change my mind. But to distort my position and to say that I'm a pro-war guy or something like that, look, my positions are out there. All I would ask people to do is check it out on the website, read it, see what you think. If you're actually a libertarian and you think I got something wrong, hit me up. Let's have a conversation. Maybe you will change my mind. I'm always against aggression in every case. Now, look, there are hard questions and there are things that thoughtful libertarians in good faith can disagree about. That's fine. We can't expect to have agreement on every possible issue. But I can tell you what I don't argue about. I don't argue about, for example, why you get to the non-aggression principle. Is it a natural rights argument, a social contract, economics, Ayn Rand, a religious view? I don't care about any of that. If you get to that point, that's fine. I also don't argue about capitalism or socialism. I'm against aggression. Capitalism has versions that are consistent with this, and so does socialism. Voluntary socialism, who am I to say that's not the right? If you want to join that, that's fine. You just don't get to force anybody to do anything, so you certainly don't get to force people into your socialism. That's all I say about socialism. I don't even argue about the government anymore. See, Justin, I don't say, you know, Mark, are you a voluntarist, a minarchist, an anarchist? I say, look, the government should be held to exactly the same standard as everybody else. And if the government doesn't aggress, I think that takes care of every beef you have with the government, my man.
Right. Now, I had made a joke earlier today on a Twitter thread where they were still talking about this issue and bring up age of consent, age of consent, age of consent. And I said, listen, age of consent is, if you want to talk about the actual libertarian principle, like without a government, you can't do so arbitrarily. Like that's the fundamental thing is people mature at different rates. People mature at different speeds. I know 30-year-olds who shouldn't be allowed to enter into contracts. I know 16-year-olds who could run million-dollar businesses. Right. Like there's a wide range, but if you're gonna, how do you test? You can't test that. So you can't have any kind of like testing metric or anything. So if the government exists, it has to treat everyone fairly. It has to have an arbitrary number. Now, if the only role of the government that existed, and me as an anarchist who opts out of the system, engages in agorism, and lives off the dollar as much as I can, if the only thing the government existed to do was to prosecute and punish pedophiles and enforce the age of consent, I would pay taxes.
Well, and I wouldn't just limit it to pedophiles, right? Anybody who aggresses against another person, that includes murderers and rapists and thieves and people who assault other people. And frankly, if you read what I put on my website, that doesn't even have to be done by the government. We can outsource all of this. We do it now. We have private cops. We have private prisons. People can do private judging. We outsource contracts to prosecutors and defense lawyers. How do we fund it? There's lots. If you look at my section on taxation, there are ways to fund all of this without aggression. If you don't want to call that a government, I don't care what you call it. I'm against aggression. I don't need a label to put on there. In fact, if you want to talk about things that can divide and turn people off, far more than merely raising the age of consent, call yourself an anarchist and see how far you get in that conversation. I don't use that word. I simply say the government should be held to exactly the same standard and it should not get too aggressive ever for any purpose. If you want to say, Mark, that's not a government, that's fine. I don't care what you call it, but no exceptions for anybody, no groups, no corporations, no governments. Nobody gets too aggressive. That's the hard line. That's our one rule. There's one basic rule out there. Don't be an aggressor. Now, if that's not libertarian enough, then we have different definitions of libertarianism.
Fair enough. Now, speaking of not libertarian enough, your definition of libertarianism, the last bit of accusation here that I want you to address, and because I've seen it, and I actually don't know any backstory on this, there is an accusation against you that you aren't really the Libertarian Party candidate, that you went around the party to get on the ballot. You are not part of the party or anything like that. What's the story from you tell it, why you decided to run for office as a Libertarian instead of a Liberty Republican to primary masters or something like that? And how did you go about getting yourself on the ballot and putting your campaign together as a Libertarian?
Well, for me, the issue is always the same. I will do whatever can be done to advance the cause of freedom and peace. Ron Paul was not effective at all as a libertarian. He put an R after his name, ran as a Republican, and became the most influential libertarian in the history of the planet. So it doesn't matter to me. In fact, I would have preferred, frankly, to even be an independent, so I don't have the baggage of the libertarians, because a Greyhound bus of baggage pulls up, right? I could have probably said age of consent without any problem in either of the other parties, but apparently there's all this craziness about libertarians. But I've been a libertarian for 30 years, and so there's nothing new there. People who donated to my campaign, I don't care who donates money to my campaign. I will always say the same thing. And I also don't care who I'm speaking to. I could go speak to the Communist Party. I will give them exactly the same talk as the libertarians, as the Republicans. I'm a one-trick pony. I got one thing to say. I'm always against aggression. By the way, You can look at my speeches that go back probably 30 years. You'll find them a little bit more hardcore, a little bit more edgy. I've spoken at Anarchapulco twice. I ran the Freedom Summit for many years. I could drop lots of names on you, but I have given more of a harder edge speech in over 30 years, but I haven't changed one position of mine in 30 years. So I would love for them to find something I've said. And by the way, there's lots of video. If you just Google Mark Victor, there's lots of video out there going back decades. Find something that's different from what I'm saying today.
And you've been consistently, you've been very principled here tonight, and with everything I've read on your website, absolutely, it's the things that threw me off. But like the one thing I'm getting from people like Dave Smith is that you are not actually the party candidate, that you put yourself on the ballot without the party help or assistance.
Well, get on the ballot in Arizona, you have to get a whole bunch of signatures. And because I ran 10 years ago as a libertarian and did very well, the Republicans changed how hard it was to get on the ballot. And what they did was they removed the ability of Republicans and Democrats to sign the petition to get the libertarian on. So only libertarians and independents can sign to get me on the ballot. So the people who put me on the ballot are libertarians and independents.
Okay. Was there any nominating convention for Libertarian Party of Arizona or anything like that to get the nominated candidate?
I'm very well known in Arizona. Nobody ran against me. If so you're a libertarian in this state, you know me pretty well.
So this is one of the things I want to bring up. It's like they're claiming you're not actually the party candidate, that you went around the party to steal the nomination. But I'm looking at it more like, well, Arizona has a pretty large number of registered libertarians. You have major party status. You have to petition only through your own kind. I remember when Adam Kakesh was running for Senate and Jen Gray was running for Secretary of State.
Call up Adam Kokesh, pretty hardcore libertarian right there.
Great friend of mine.
Ask him about he will laugh in your face if you say, is the guy really a libertarian?
Yeah, I love Adam, but like I remember Adam and Jen Gray was running for Secretary of State at the time. They couldn't get on the ballot. They couldn't actually put together a petition drive to get on the ballot and had to run a writing campaign. And that was with party resources, with party help. So you're telling me that you did it without party resources and without party help, you managed to get yourself on the ballot.
We just hired people.
Which is more than the party could muster for you, which is great. So I say, you didn't go around the party. You did it.
The party, the Arizona Libertarian Party chairman supports me.
Right. And that's what I was going to say. Bring it up. Like, they're being accused of you being going around the party and getting yourself on the ballot to steal the nomination. The very first thing I did was I went to the Libertarian Party of Arizona's Twitter page, and all they've done for the past couple of weeks is retweet articles about you. So, if they're right. So, how can an accusation hold weight when it's so provably false?
This is a rot in the Libertarian Party. It's just a rot. And it sounds like, and again, I refrain from bashing other people. I don't even bash Masters, but
why I'll handle that for you.
Why Dave Smith is out there? I mean, I don't know Dave very well. I've met him a couple of times, but let's assume he's a real libertarian. People tell me he's a real libertarian. Why he would be supporting Blake Masters instead of me is shocking to me, and it's embarrassing, frankly, as a party, for the Libertarian Party to take a guy who's clearly a Republican and support him over a guy who's clearly a libertarian.
I'll go even farther. Dave isn't forced to pick a horse in this race. Dave is not an Arizona resident. He's not an Arizona voter. He's not. Dave is a New Jersey voter and a New Jersey resident. You're not running in New Jersey. He's not trying to decide who to vote for with his conscience and whether or not he needs to vote strategically or tactically to have an impact in the race in his state. He went out of his way to make his voice and opinion known on a race he has no horse in himself. If he decided he didn't like you, he could openly say nothing at all and just have no impact on the race. If he decided he didn't like you, he could openly say, I don't like Mark Victor. I don't support Mark Victor. But to go out of his way to say, I support Masters in this race makes me call into question Dave Smith's own principles and whether or not he is qualified to be the spokesperson of the liberty movement that he claims to be and that people claim him to be, because he openly says, I support Masters, and I do so because Masters is an anti-war candidate, and that's the most important issue. When the platforms of the candidates could not be so different on that issue than what he portrays.
By the way, Dave Smith sent me an email that was very friendly and was very cordial and very nice. And it wasn't the only things he identified were, there were two things. He identified the comment about the age of consent, which, okay, maybe look at that 1 second I had to throw something out. Maybe I could have thrown something different out. I'm not pretending to be perfect. I'm an imperfect guy and I act imperfectly. Sometimes I stand behind what I said. I just think, okay, fine. Politically, maybe it could have been said a little differently. No problem. And then the position on defending against Masters' humongous overgeneralization about all generals being boobs. And I threw out Mattis as an option. And then he said, well, Mattis didn't want to pull troops out of Syria. And I said, true, but there were, 10 other things that I liked about Mattis, or roughly, I don't know how many, but there were several other things. The guy's not a libertarian, but I only raised him just to say, look, the guy's not an incompetent pro-woke boob. That's all. And so to take those things and say, I'm going to support the guy that's anti-gay marriage and pro-war and for tariffs and all these other things doesn't make sense to me. So I don't know what's going on there, frankly.
Now, have you seen Dave's tweet about you?
No, I don't even get on social media.
Okay. Well, I'll bring this up for you because it's interesting, because what he posted on Twitter wasn't friendly at all. And it actually makes me call into question, like, why he's showing two faces to people privately and publicly, especially when he's someone who advocates all the time for we should criticize privately to hide our criticisms and infighting from the public so we can work together. But this is the tweet he actually shared. He said, Will Chamberlain had posted the video of your debate, the clip from the debate where you'd made the age of consent comments. And Dave said, Jesus fucking Christ, this guy is a clown who has absolutely nothing to do with us. He went outside the party and got signatures to be on the ballot. Stupid Arizona laws. I support Masters. Also, let's not pretend Republicans don't have a lot of work to do.
Well, again, like I said, the only people who could put me on the ballot were libertarians and independents. So he's totally wrong about that. But you know what? Let's have a discussion about it. I am very happy to have I'll go on Dave Smith's podcast and talk to him about all these issues. I have absolutely nothing to hide. We don't have to prep it. We don't have to have any ground rules. I'm happy to come on his show and talk about, he can ask me any question he wants.
Yeah. And then people were very upset with me for pointing out, I'm like, so far outside the party that the party promotes him on their official website with a link to your profile on the party website, and the party still tweets about him and supports them and promotes him. So nothing to do with us, I guess, according to Dave Smith. But every accusation falls flat except for maybe the accusation that you should have picked a better subject to relate to than age of consent.
Yeah. And I'm sort of mixed on it, frankly, because all I said was there is no objectively right answer on the age of consent. And because of that, reasonable minds disagree. And therefore, the local community should pick the rule they think is best. That's all. I don't find that so terribly controversial. And I don't want to be so wimpy here that we're afraid to put our positions out there because we're so worried about what maybe people who are, let's just say, unsophisticated are going to take and run with. Omar. Mark's a pedophile from that? Really? I mean, what a ridiculous thing to say.
It's crazy. But you know what? Crazy, that's the drama we get. And like, here's maybe the argument. Maybe the argument is to be made to the Libertarian Party is a vehicle that doesn't serve its purpose anymore. Maybe the argument is you run as independent or you run as whatever party. If partisan politics are so divisive and to the point where the parties no longer represent the people, don't expect the party to represent anything. Run as a Republican. Run on a Libertarian platform as a Republican. Run on a Libertarian platform as a Democrat. Maybe if getting into office and getting in a position where people hear what you have to say is more important, but at the root of it, back to what we said at the very beginning, if you're not campaigning in the most quote-unquote radical way, if you're not presenting your ideas, your values, and your viewpoints in a way that challenges the way people think, you're not affecting a cultural change. And if you're not affecting a cultural change, an electoral change is short-term and meaningless.
I couldn't agree more. I have said, look at any of my videos on Live and Let Live. I have said ad nauseum, the goal here, the stated goal of Live and Let Live is to win hearts and minds for the principle. Until we do that, we're accomplishing nothing. And how are we going to do that if we're not talking about the principle? I don't want to sugarcoat things. We shouldn't have to. I feel good about being against aggression on all issues. I don't feel I got to hide that.
No. And the cultural change is so much more meaningful and powerful. People talk about how Ron Paul was an ineffective legislator. And you can look at it through Ron Paul's career. As a congressman, he was wildly ineffective. He accomplished next to nothing as a congressman. However, he inspired two generations of libertarian activism that basically built the Free State Project, that basically revitalized the Libertarian Party twice, that gave activists fighting for freedom, fighting for marijuana decriminalization, fighting for LGBTQ equality across the country, the push and the motivation they needed with that cultural drive to accomplish great things.
Yeah.
And I mean, it wasn't what he didn't accomplish it by passing laws. He accomplished it by inspiring people.
That is exactly my position. I will do whatever will put us closer to pro-freedom positions on everything. Look, as far as Dave Smith goes, I, other than this incident here, and I don't really know what to think about it, I've always liked the guy. I've never said a bad word about the guy. His emails to me have been friendly and cordial. These tweets, I don't know where they're coming from or why. I don't know why he's treating me with kindness and cordial privately and out publicly saying really horrible, disrespectful, false things. But I'm only responsible for what I do and say, and I will keep doing and saying what I'm doing. My goal always is to be civil and cordial with everybody. If we have a disagreement, then okay, let's have a disagreement. We should disagree in agreeable ways. But I'm not backing off of my principles, and I don't feel like I need to sugarcoat them. I think they should be out there, and I agree with you. We need to effect a cultural change. And by the way, if people understand our position, they will agree with us. Our position is very reasonable. I just think people don't understand what our position is right now.
That's a whole other debate to have, and it's a very interesting one. I'm not sure either of us really have the time to get into it tonight, but I used to believe that myself. I used to believe that if we could get libertarian ideas in front of everybody, everybody would realize that they are libertarian and they do work. Having lived in New Hampshire, having lived in a libertarian community, having lived in a community of anarchists, people who live off the grid, off the government dollar, who don't participate in government systems for so long, and seeing the dichotomy between our urban centers and our libertarian diaspora that we do have here in New Hampshire, I actually think there is a divide, because libertarianism is not a political philosophy whatsoever. Libertarianism is a moral and ethical philosophy that guides how people live their lives. And it is getting people to change their politics is easy. Getting people to change their core moral philosophy and how they live their life is incredibly difficult. And I do believe, like, things that we find to be immoral and objectionable, such as projection of military force, taxation, corruption in government, there are things, public schools, indoctrination centers. These are things that the vast majority of people actually don't find objectionable. They find them to be perfectly reasonable, where we find them to be objectionable and immoral. And they find our ideas of self-reliance and not having community support on certain things like public schools, it's up to you to educate your children. And if you get together with your neighbors to form a pod where you take turns at helping each other educate your children, that is done so on a voluntary basis instead of through compulsory public education, they find forcing that responsibility onto the individual to be objectionable and immoral. And they believe the state and the community has an obligation. And I think that the ultimate divide there between the libertarian ethos and the normals, and Republicans and Democrats have so much actually in common with each other because they share morals and they just disagree on specifics.
Yep.
Whereas libertarians have different morals to begin with. And that's our culture. That's our moral and ethical beliefs that guide our politics. And that's what makes us such a fringe minority. And I think we can accurately gauge the size of that majority to be about 3-5% of the country.
Justin, I'm going to tell you, you will love everything about Live and Let Live. In fact, if you spend a little bit of time looking at what's going on at liveandletlive.org, by the way, we've got chapters all over the world, 10 different countries in Africa. We got people in Europe, all over the place. We're growing a movement here that actually goes a little further on those moral principles, but making the huge point, these are optional, right? You don't have to follow them. You can completely ignore them, but we're still pushing them anyway. You will love everything about Live and Let Live. In fact, what I would love is to have you tear through that Live and Let Live website, look at the podcast, and if you find anything you disagree with, we could do part two of this interview. I'd love to hear from you. And if not, I'm going to ask you, why haven't you joined the movement and why don't you get involved and help us with the global movement? We're trying to unite our brothers and sisters around the world, the reasonable people, around a couple of simple ideas, right? The legal principle and the moral principle. It's not that confusing.
And I'll end up coming back and asking you why you haven't moved to New Hampshire to help us see it through in the long run. But
the answer back is because I'm tired of shoveling snow, my brother. I lived up there in Massachusetts for a lot of years, and I go to between Arizona and Hawaii for a reason. Other than that, if I was going to go live in New England again, it would definitely be the live free or die state.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for coming on tonight, Mark. It's been insightful. I love seeing these things addressed and giving you a chance to actually speak them, because unfortunately, you're not on Twitter. I mean, you're the first politician I've encountered not on social media.
I'm not a politician.
That's true.
Wants freedom and peace.
Fair enough.
A platform to run for. And if, by the way, if I get elected for the Senate, I don't have any illusions I'm going to be able to change much up there. What I am going to do is sit on Fox News couch and sit on CNN couch, and I'm going to say exactly the same things I've been saying for 30 years in exactly the same way.
I don't think people understand the value of a single senator. And I point this out to a lot of people too. Like, you could get elected to your state house of representatives and have a very marginal impact. Marshall Burt, who got elected as a libertarian in Wyoming, has had a very outsized impact simply because of the press surrounding him being the only one. He's had more influence than he's due. Here in New Hampshire, libertarians have had a tremendous impact on our state legislature by sheer volume, using the kind of run and cover strategy where running is both Republicans and Democrats. We've had Free Staters libertarians elected with both major parties. Excellent. And we've had libertarians elected in New Hampshire as well. But getting enough of a volume to swing the entire house on key issues has made tremendous impact. A libertarian getting elected to the U.S. Congress, I think, would be utterly meaningless, because so little is actually decided by the members of Congress. But it's the party leadership that runs that house. Whereas a libertarian who gets elected to the United States Senate, which is typically tied 50-50 and still has a filibuster, a single individual can hold the entire body hostage for 6 years.
There are things you could do there, but like you say, what we got to do is not hold up one piece of legislation. We got to affect hearts and minds. That's my primary mission in doing everything that I'm doing in politics. I want that forum. I want to get our message out there, and I want to win hearts and minds.
Awesome. Well, I wish you the best. Good luck with it. One more time, where can everybody find you? Because you're not on social media.
Well, my political website is liveandletliverevolution.com. The big project, which is the Live and Let Live movement, is liveandletlive.org. And if people want to get a hold of me, you can always get a hold of me through my law firm website, which, by the way, is not accidentally named theattorneysforfreedom.com. Every lawyer at my firm is hardcore pro-freedom. In fact, that's another thing I've been pushing. It's actually attorneysforfreedom.com.
Attorneys, I'll fix it.
The name of the firm is Attorneys for Freedom. But what I'm saying is every attorney at my firm has to sign the Live and Let Live pledge. We're hardcore activists. We're all libertarian, pro-freedom law firm. That's what we're about. So anyways, thanks for giving me this forum to put out some of my views. And I'm happy to have a conversation with anybody on any of these issues. I got nothing to hide.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in and watching and listening. Make sure you hit that big like button. Hit that subscribe button. Leave some comments below. Let us know what you thought. And until next time, as always, be free. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Subversive. Make sure to like, subscribe, and turn on notifications to get alerted every time we go live on YouTube. And make sure to leave some comments and reviews on whatever platform you listen on to let me know what you thought of this episode. And a huge thanks and shout out to our sponsors and the awesome members of the Insurgency on Patreon. If you enjoyed this content, You can join the insurgency on Patreon by following the links in the description for patreon.com/O'Donnell. And if you can't catch the show live, you can always catch it the next day on YouTube, Odyssey, Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, CastBox, and wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts every day. So until next time, everybody, be free.